Arizona's news station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You know what? If you missed our last hour, I'm going to invite you to go back and listen to it on the podcast. We just dedicated an hour of the show to suicide, and particularly teen suicide, and what we need to know about the struggles of young people today and how we can best help them. So we're going to have that podcast up for you, ktar.com. You can subscribe to it on your iPhone or your Android. The podcast this week brought to you by Stampede Plumbing. But we also want to give you the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, because we also realize that there are people who are struggling, that the conversation may have empowered them to reach out and seek help. And that's our goal. We're hoping to make a difference. So we've tweeted it out for you at Bruce and Pamela. And I also want to give it to you right now. 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-8255. We talk about suicide like it's rare, but as the doctor told us, it's actually quite common.
Yeah. We also have up on our social media channels, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, you can find links, you can find the discussion around it, and you can navigate your way to it. So I encourage you to check it out. The Senate is expected to vote. I keep hearing any minute now, Pamela, any minute now, the Senate is expected to pass a resolution that would nullify President Trump's national emergency declaration along our southern border.
You use the word nullify. I keep seeing rebuke.
Rebuke.
They're going to rebuke.
It's like a sternly worded email.
Is that what rebuke means? Okay. Yeah, I just find that funny.
Right now, there are 8 Republican senators.
Oh, it's 8 now.
Yeah. Who say they will vote with the 47 Democrats.
Okay. We're at 55 now then.
To say that they are not okay with use of presidential or executive authority to declare emergency declaration for something like funding for a border wall.
Good. Good. And hats off to those 8 Republicans in particular, because to me this is a constitutional issue. It's not a border issue. There is a problem on the border. And there's no two ways about it. There is a problem. Is it a crisis? Is it a national emergency? Those titles give it different avenues for funding. There's a problem, and we can't agree on how to solve it. But that doesn't mean we just beat people over the head with our way of solving it and say, ha ha, take that, which is what the president has necessarily done.
And this is a test, to say the least. And I think a lot of people are paying attention. And I would argue that listening to some of the 8 senators, Republican senators, who say they're going to vote for this nullification, rebuke, whatever it is, are saying we can acknowledge there's a problem on the border. We also acknowledge the Constitution exists for a reason. We understand that the Congress of the United States controls the purse strings, and that we just passed a spending bill a couple of weeks ago that gave $1 billion, I don't remember the number, plus other monies for border security. Trump just didn't like the number, so he declared an emergency. Do you truly believe that is what the founders of the Constitution, the founders of this country and the writers of the Constitution, meant the emergency powers to be used for? If you do, we live in a different planet. That's fine. You can believe it. It is unconstitutional. And the idea of using the power for that is uniquely unconstitutional.
So the president's having a bit of a tough day. Again, you've got the Senate about to vote any moment to
literally
rebuke,
right,
Trump over his emergency. But let's get out of the Senate.
Go.
And walk across the hallway.
Go right down the hall.
I'm kind of picturing it as a nice long hallway.
It is probably kind of a long hallway.
Is there marble?
There's a hell of a lot of marble
some
in
statues.
Congress. There is a hell of a lot of marble.
You know, the heels go click, 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 click.
You hear them coming a mile away.
So I've now left the Senate, and I've now walked in to the halls of the House of Representatives, where this morning, in a unanimous, let that sink in for a second, unanimous, it was a 420-0. We'll get into that in a second. But a 420-0 vote that says the House wants the Robert Mueller report to be public.
So there are 435 members of Congress.
Correct.
So 15 of them voted present or
are they
didn't
abstained?
Vote at all. Abstained.
Abstained.
But unanimous. Not one voted against it. 420 to not. Can we just point out, by the way, that, you know, when they do these silly votes, like they stand up, you've seen it before. I stand before this great body to put forth the legislation to name the post office in Safford, Arizona, after a great American. They don't even get 420 to zero. Like, there's always somebody that votes against the naming of a post office, for God's sake.
Right. So not everybody was necessarily present for the vote. Okay, that's why you've got 15 that weren't counted in there for a total of 435. But you also have a couple that just voted present.
Yeah.
Among them?
Oh, here we go. I already know.
Arizona's very own representative, Paul Gosar.
Shocking development.
Yeah, I'm no dentist.
Come on, why don't you stand on principle. Be on the wrong side of history. I think you already are, don't get me wrong, but be on record as voting on the wrong side of history. Be my guest.
You know,
this is non-binding.
This is symbolic.
Thank you.
Okay, at best, but I think it's a pretty big symbol. Yeah, 420. And really what this is saying is that it is important to Congress. It is important to democracy. It is important to the American people that there is transparency.
Regardless of what it says.
Exactly.
I have no idea what it
says. Because I've said it before on this air, I'll say it again right now. Whenever the Mueller report finally comes out, remember how it was supposed to be last month? Like, we always hear, it's like, oh, it's coming out.
There's always these leaks, like, it's coming out any minute now.
Nobody knows when it's coming out.
They do not.
But when
it
does, Bruce, if Robert Mueller comes out and does not find evidence of collusion or conspiracy, and does not find any evidence of obstruction of justice, for me, it's done.
Well, you say that, and there's a certain measure of that, but you lose sight of the fact, especially from the chattering class that claims there's nothing there. Nothing there also means there have been 34 indictments, 34 indictments of companies, 5 guilty pleas, 4 convictions. We have people going to jail. 191 total criminal charges brought forth by the Mueller investigation so far. The idea that it hasn't found anything is absolutely ridiculous.
No, I'm not claiming it hasn't found.
I'm not saying
anything.
You, but anybody. There's nothing there, really. Ask the people sitting in jail right now if there's nothing there, and the ones who, by the way, are going to go to jail, because there's many more.
I have a respect for Robert Mueller, so I trust what he and his team comes out with, whatever it may be. And nobody knows what it is.
I have no idea.
Because they've kept that information closely guarded to their vest. So I appreciate the symbolic gesture that the House did. And it's just that they unanimously voted that they want the report and the special counsel investigation for the Russia investigation to be made public.
Yeah. Regardless of what it shows. Good, bad, ugly, in the middle.
Well,
I think it's going to be something
what
in
does
the
it
middle.
Say? Well, okay. I know we got to move on here. But no. What does it say that Arizona Representative Paul Gosar just said present and didn't vote with the majority and didn't want to be the one?
He didn't want to be the one
who voted
against it.
Yeah. What does that tell you?
He has no conviction. He has no actual principles.
Is that what it says?
Yeah, that's what it says to me. Stand on your principles. No, I want to keep this secret. Regardless of what it says, I'm going to defend and protect Trump at all costs, because that's what he says to me on a regular basis.
So by not, are you saying that by just voting present, he voted against the resolution?
Well, he inoculated himself in the middle of that. So he could always go back and say, I never voted against this. But he can also say, I never voted for it. He can have it both ways.
Wants his cake and eat it too?
Yeah, he can have it both ways. But we know what his real thing is. We know what it was. I think it'd been awesome to be 419 to 1 and Gosar being the one going, nope, I'm all for keeping this private and keeping it from the public seeing
it
in the effort of protecting my buddy Trump.
Well, he didn't do that because he doesn't want us to beat up on him too.
No beating up on you, Gosar. What are you going to do about it? I mean, I'm no dentist, don't get me wrong, but I can read body language, and I know what voting present on this means, all right? I know what voting present means. The next step in the college admission scandal? People are lining up to sue. We'll tell you what they're suing for.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Call it the fallout from the college admission cheating scandal that has been dominating the news. I would argue dominating because there are celebrities and rich people involved. But still, we now have, because one of the things I said this the other day. I said, who's the victim? Who are the victims? Show me the victim in this. Who was how do you prove someone was harmed by it? We do have two girls now.
The claim.
Who claim, and boy, I got to tell you what, whatever ambulance chaser managed to knock on their door, good on you. It strikes me they're on some pretty thin ice.
Erica Olson and Kalea Woods are students at Stanford and accused their school and others of negligence. Olson and Woods said they paid admission application fees to several schools without any warning that unqualified students were slipping in through the back door through the fraud, bribery, cheating, and dishonesty alleged by federal prosecutors. Their lawsuit said the universities failed to maintain adequate protocols to guarantee the sanctity of the college admissions process. The students said they're entitled to full restitution of their application fees, plus compensatory damages.
Guarantee the sanctity of the college admissions process.
It sounds like something that somebody went to Stanford would say.
But can we point out they're in Stanford?
Okay, it's not like they're at some community college.
Al's Dental College.
Right, exactly.
Right, we're at Al's Dental College, and we didn't get into Yale.
Here's the deal. I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
I knew it was coming. You had asked who's the victim, and I didn't have at the time a name for you, okay? Because I don't think that there is a name, an individual you can point your finger at and say, aha, see?
You didn't get in.
They didn't get in.
Because Richie Rich did.
Bruce St. James didn't get in because Pamela Hughes did.
Right.
You're not going to be able to make that one-to-one correlation.
I agree.
But there is a victim, and the victim, that person does exist, okay? There is a student out there that did not get into one of these universities because somebody else's parents bought their way in with a guarantee.
But it may be impossible to prove who that person is.
No, I concede that. There are victims. We may never know exactly who they are. But the fact that these two Stanford students have filed this lawsuit, I think is funny. I knew it was coming, but I think it's funny. Here's why I think it's funny.
Right.
Universities have not been charged in this crime.
The actual schools.
So you haven't heard Stanford, Yale, UCLA, USC, Harvard.
Can we go again? Elite colleges and USC.
They weren't named in any of these indictments. Why? Because it wasn't a scheme where they were involved in. Now, maybe
allegedly.
Well, I'm just going off of what we have right now.
Right.
Maybe there were coaches that were in
on it. We know there were.
And those coaches are being held accountable.
Some of them been fired.
So how do you sue a university that hasn't been?
You have to prove that the university knew,
was in on it,
what
somehow
was going on. You know, can I just give you like the pure libertarian argument behind this?
Oh, this should be Rich. What's up?
If you truly believe in a free market like I do, why shouldn't elite colleges and USC?
You're ticking some Trojans off right now.
Just be able to put the bids, put it up for bid. It's like an auction. It's eBay. We have 1,200 undergrads we're accepting, and the auction's online now. Highest 1,200 bids get in.
Because, excuse me, it's not all about money. It isn't in all reality. Because you
the
want your
USC trustee just spit their coffee out.
No, because if it is all about money, it's just for rich kids, and then that does devalue the education that you're getting. You want smart kids going to your school because then you want them to go on to get good jobs and represent your university. So there's more to it than just the money, but money does play an aspect of it. These students, though, these two Stanford students claim, Erica, she was denied the opportunity to gain admission, a fair opportunity she wanted to go to Yale. And she says that she had stellar standardized test scores.
I bet you did.
And athletic talent.
Gifted.
But was rejected by Yale after paying her application fee. Here's the deal.
And then that's proof somehow of a conspiracy as opposed to we just didn't like your application.
Okay. The other young lady in this. She says she was an exceptional student, an athlete. And that when applying to enter the University of Southern California, she was never informed that the process was unfair and rigged, in which parents could buy their way into the university through bribery and dishonest schemes. Well, USC apparently didn't know, so how are they going to inform you during the admissions process? And if your big thing is that I paid the application fee before I knew this was rigged, then I'd say, okay, here's your $80 back for the application fee, now move along. Hey, guess what? Well, life isn't fair.
I extend it like this. If that is your argument, that there were less qualified people admitted to the university over you, then I hope that Snowflake number one and Snowflake number two at Stanford,
Erica and Kalea, yeah,
are naming in their lawsuit every member of the USC football team. Because I feel pretty confident, hearing about their GPAs and extracurricular, that they are academically more qualified than every single person on the football squad. Just going to throw it out there. I don't know if there's a lot of Rhodes Scholars playing offensive line at USC. There may be. You understand my point?
I get your point. I get your point. These young ladies, though, are saying that their Stanford degree is now not worth as much as it was before. Why? Because they claim prospective employers may now question whether they were admitted to the university on their own merits.
Oh, for God's sake.
Or having rich parents willing to bribe the school officials.
Do they really think they're going to fill out a job app and it says you graduated from Stanford with a degree in art history and somebody's going to go, oh, Stanford. Well, you obviously bought your way into that. It must not be worth the paper it's written on. Not Al's Dental College. Stanford. Whatever. The scandal. College admission scandal amongst elite colleges and USC continues to evolve. We just wrapped up a full hour talking about the problem, the issue, the real life impact of teen suicide here in the Valley. We're going to play you some of the highlights, react to some of that as well, and get some of your comments. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You'll be excused if you did not spend the entire 10 o'clock hour with us today. I understand life happens. You got work, you got school, you got stuff going on. But we spent an entire hour on KTAR talking specifically about teen suicide with a clinical psychologist, an expert in how the digital world, social media affects kids today. And we had the discussion when we were presented with facts, and we've known them for a little while now, about how prevalent suicide, and specifically teen suicide, is. That it is not rare. It is not something that happens to those people over there. It's something that's happening to people and their family on sadly a regular basis.
In Arizona, number one leading cause of death for kids 10 to 14.
10 to 14 yeah. years old, the yeah. number one cause of death is suicide.
15 to 34, it's the number two cause. And so we wanted to take the time to talk about it because we know that it's impacting your families. It's impacting your life.
Your community.
And we wanted to have a discussion about it because it's not something we discuss often. It's a difficult conversation. It is uncomfortable, but it's important. You can't just bury your head in the sand and go, la, 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 well, this isn't happening.
And I would argue that some of the things that I learned in hearing from our clinical psychologist, from hearing from our digital expert was that if you think it can't happen in your world, you're fooling yourself. And then how many times have we heard the story? And we heard them from you, the listeners. I've gotten emails and tweets.
Yeah.
You would have never expected it with this kid. This kid had everything going for him. They were, insert captain of the football team, head of the cheerleading squad. They were beautiful. They were smart. They had all these great things going for them. And yet here we are talking about their loss.
One of my big takeaways from Dr. Aaron Krasnow, he is the Associate Vice President of Health and Counseling Services at ASU.
He left out amazing.
Yeah, he was pretty incredible. And we're going to play some of the cuts, okay, the highlights from the interview with him. But I'm going to tell you right now, these highlights aren't going to do the conversation justice. So I invite you to go back and download the podcast. And it's not to sell you something. It's to make a difference. And so it's on KTIR.com. It is up on, you can download it from the app, iPhone, Android. We make it super easy for you. And listen to the conversation. It's the second hour of the podcast, the entire hour. You're going to get so many nuggets. But I do want to play my biggest takeaway from Dr. Krasnow, because what I learned from him, Bruce, is that our young people are getting the message. they're recognizing the epidemic and the crisis that they're facing because they're facing it every single day. They have students coming up to them. They've got friends coming up to them telling about self-harm and thinking about suicide. And we've told those students for years, for decades, get help. Tell a trusted adult. Okay. And they've not gotten the message. And they are going to trusted adults. But here's the deal. A lot of us trusted adults don't know what to do. When a teen or even an adult comes up to them and tells them they're struggling with mental health, and they're thinking about harming themselves. The doctor gave a very simple first step as to what to do. If you find yourself in that situation, take a listen.
It's a critical thing that the first thing that you do when someone either volunteers their struggle or tells you about a struggle is that you thank them for telling you. And that is a piece that a lot of people leave out. They go into like a problem solving mode, or they go through their list of training that they got in their curriculum or what they heard on a radio show. And the first thing they need to do is thank the person, because what that does is it communicates that whatever the person said to you is honorable and important enough that it deserves my thanks.
Thank
you. Interesting. Probably not what most people think.
No, but. I've struggled. I've had my own mental health struggles. You have. I know you've been very open and honest with them as well. And when you share them with people, because you're vulnerable when you do, how many people have said thank you? It's not usually the first thing you hear.
Some, absolutely.
But not a lot.
Well, and you know, we talk about stigma. And we've talked about the stigma of mental health and suffering from mental health or depression or things like that. And I think we've made strides. I'm not talking about me personally. I just think society's made strides where we can talk about that and people can come forward and you can hear folks talk about it. And maybe it's not so shocking anymore. But there's still a hump to get over when it comes to asking someone, are you thinking about hurting yourself? Are you considering suicide?
Have you ever had to ask the question?
No, I haven't.
I have.
Yeah.
Not once, but twice.
Yeah.
And.
Well, I you can say who one of them is.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I asked you.
Yeah. I remember.
I wasn't going to say that.
You don't have to protect me. I appreciate
but
it.
It's.
Yeah. You thought. And I was
concerned about you.
And you had every right to be concerned about me. I remember one day I overslept.
Oh, God.
I overslept. I was taking new medicine. And
I remember.
I'm not making an excuse for sleeping past an alarm, but it just kind of screwed me up. And I woke up late and I was a little frantic. And I picked it up rather to you thought there was a chance that I had killed myself.
We had Phoenix police headed to your house for a wellness check.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's a difficult conversation. I appreciate you having. I appreciate you asking me. It's not easy being on the receiving end of that as well. Can I say?
Oh no,
it's not easy being on the receiving end.
And I know that. Well, yeah, you can hear. It's difficult to have these conversations, folks. We're being open and honest with you because we want you to be open and honest with your friends, your loved ones, your family, your kids. And we're trying to make it as easy for you as possible because it's hard. So we've got that podcast available for you. It's brought to you this week by Stampede Plumbing, but that's not what's important. What's important is to have these tools and these discussions because they can save a life.
Let me put it this way. I'm proud of that hour.
You and I both, man.
I'm proud of that hour, 10 o'clock hour. I really am. And I think it's the type of radio program. I think it's the type of discussion that just honestly might save a life. And I'm proud of that. I'm really proud of it. Well, we got some other things to be proud of, and we have some wonderful guests coming in. We're going to share with you our friends at Children's Cancer Network coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You know, we'll do this segment a little bit differently. Normally, we talk about other things going on in the news, and Pamela restores your faith in humanity. But we have some guests in the studio who do an amazing job of restoring our faith in humanity on a regular basis. Right? So they deserve a whole segment, Pam.
They do deserve a whole segment. And they've got some really important things coming up as well. So we want to welcome to the show right now Patty Luttrell. She's a friend of the program. And she's also the executive director of Children's Cancer Network. Good morning to you, Patty.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. We love being here.
We also have Leslie. Leslie is the mother of Gwen. She is a mother of a seven-year-old who has the awesome distinction of beating cancer.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks
congratulations
for being here, Leslie.
On that alone, right?
So, Leslie, tell us a little bit about Gwen's story.
Sure. Gwen was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia when she was only 4 years old. It came out of nowhere. She had a fever one weekend during the summer, and when she woke up with a little rash on her neck, mommy instinct went off that something was wrong. We took her to the pediatrician. They told us to get blood tests. And by the end of that day, we were told that it's likely that she had leukemia, told to go immediately to the Phoenix Children's Hospital. Had tests done. The next day it was confirmed she actually did have leukemia. They inserted a port and started chemotherapy immediately.
Wow.
So our life changed in the course of 24 hours.
I can't imagine the head spinning that goes on with that. And I know, just because of my lucky connections, how the people at Children's Cancer Network then can immediately come in and help families like yours.
Yeah, we were very lucky to have found the Children's Cancer Network. It is such a shock to the whole family and everything that you once previously knew. And while the doctors and the nurses are great at telling you what to do on the medical side of things, without groups like Children's Cancer Network, there's no one to really help you deal with the emotional and mental aspects of it. That's where Children's Cancer Network really helped us. I remember stumbling into the office shortly after diagnosis and meeting Patty Luttrell. And I think she knew as soon as I walked in the door that I was a newly diagnosed mom, because I think I got out two words of my child just been diagnosed and just broke down. And she was there to help me. And she has been since.
Well, Children's Cancer Network, I don't want to speak too much for both of you, but I know it as an amazing organization that steps in and helps those families, helps them in ways that you may not think of, ways that I would say hopefully for most of you, thankfully, you haven't had a child diagnosed with cancer, and you don't know what that does to the rest of your life, your household, your work, the other kids you may have, school, etc. And Children's Cancer Network steps in and helps with all of the other things that help life move forward, Patty. And I just think it's an amazing organization.
Thank
Did I do
you.
A good job of explaining what you do?
I'm impressed. Thank you so much.
I've been around you long enough now. Well, you guys have an event coming up, and an event that, again, it helps you guys raise the funds so that you can continue to go out and provide for these families. The Run to Fight Children's Cancer, it's coming up.
It is. It's coming up on Saturday, March 16th, just in a couple days.
Yeah.
And it's going to be an exciting day. We should have about 2,000 runners and walkers out there. It's a 5K, a 5K walk run, a 10K run. And then, of course, the big finale is an amazing cancer survivor walk that is just kind of the icing on the cake to celebrate these with these families and to walk together and unite to really step up the fight against childhood cancer.
And that's what you do. That's what you do at Children's Cancer Network, is you walk with these families. When they get that diagnosis, you're right by their side. And I know, because my cousin has been diagnosed with leukemia, very, very similar story to yours, Leslie, where, he was fine and had this fever and couldn't break the fever, and they take him to urgent care, and then they do blood work, and then they go home, and she's having pizza, and then gets the phone call, and life, it's like pre-phone call and post-phone
call. Yeah, never be the same.
Is how you describe your life. And you've been there for the family, Patty, and so this is an important event that you've got a lot of support from, and people are interested in being a part of. So if can they still participate this Saturday?
Absolutely.
Where can they go to get more information?
Actually, the website is runtofightcancer.com. And they can sign on for online registration until midnight. Well, actually, 11:59 tonight.
Got to get that 1 minute in there.
Those
right?
of you that
11:59
exactly when the clock changes.
So online registration continues, and then we have the ability to sign up on event day of event. So
we're gonna tweet all that information out as well.
Excellent. You registration know? Opens at 5:30 on Saturday, and people can come volunteer and they can certainly donate as well. We have virtual runners. So
that's great.
There's all different ways to participate, and it's just a great opportunity to come together to make a difference.
Excellent.
It's the 9th annual race to raise awareness and funds for Arizona families battling the disease, the Run to Fight Children's Cancer. Thank you again, Leslie, for being here. Congratulations on your daughter.
Yeah. Thank you.
It'll be
That's
wonderful
great.
To see her out there as a starter. And again, Patty, you, your husband, your whole family, and all the work that you guys do with Children's Cancer Network, it is just amazing. And we are very lucky to have people like you in our own community. Very lucky.
Thank you so much.
All right. Restoring Your Faith in Humanity, Pamela and I, thank you for spending some time with us today. Don't forget, you can go back if you missed any of the show and catch it on the podcast at KTR.com. Pretty easy to find over there. Subscribe to our Apple or Android products as well. Hey, thanks a lot to DJ Tommy Two-Tone, Super Producer CBZ, and Bob McClain.